disclaimers actually before I start. Number one, another massive topic. The thing that I found with these talks last week and this week is really it's been a process of distillation. I could have very easily given you the 5-hour version of each one, but I've decided to like try and trim that down a bit. If you want to pick up John Mark Comer's book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, and read the chapter there, you will discover a couple of things. Number one, you will find a bigger treatment of this than I have time for today, and you will also discover where I got like most of my best material. I'm really indebted to John Mark Comer's thinking on all of this, and so I just want to, like, when you hear stuff in this sermon, you're like, wow, that's good, it wasn't me, but I'm just, you know, putting that out there. Let's get started. When I was training to be a primary school teacher, I attended, I reckon, hundreds of hours of university lecturers and tutorials, and honestly, I'm not sure I got all that much out of most of them. Like, I might have picked up a useful insight here and there, but the truth is there's only so much you can learn about being a primary school teacher by sitting in a lecture theater, hearing other people talk about it. And so almost all of my actual learning, the stuff that I still use in the classroom all these years later, happened when I went out on my prac placements, because that was where I got to step into actual classrooms with actual students. And most importantly, it was where I got to apprentice under an experienced teacher who knew what they were doing. To be with that teacher, to see how they did it, so eventually I could learn to become like them and to do what they did. Here on the ground, actually doing the stuff under the guidance of an expert, that's where I went from learning about being a teacher to actually like beginning to become a teacher. And so it is with the way of Jesus. If you're joining us for the first time in this series, we're in the second week of what we're calling formed, becoming like Jesus in an age of self. And basically what we're doing here is exploring the idea that the way of Jesus is a way of life. And we're investigating what it looks like in practice to apprentice under Jesus and to let him teach us how to live that life out. And so each week in November, we're exploring a different practice from the way of Jesus, a different life habit modeled in Jesus' own life and then practiced by Christians all down through the centuries that we believe by the grace of God and the power of his Spirit can help us along in living out this way of life that Jesus modeled for us. And so this week, we're looking at Sabbath. A little while back, I was teaching through a series on these spiritual practices, these practices from the way of Jesus, with a bunch of year five students. And at first, it was going really well, you guys. We had a fantastic lesson on gratitude. That was pretty intuitive to them. We did this 3-week prayer challenge that a bunch of them took up. We had some really great conversations about Bible reading and community and generous living. They were like fully on board. Everything was going fine until we came to the lesson on Sabbath. And as soon as I started talking about this idea of setting aside a full day each week to stop and reconnect with God, a weird, uncomfortable silence filled the room. And eventually, a girl put her hand up and said what they were all thinking. Mr. Morphew, I don't think this one is very realistic. We can't take a day off. We don't have time. 10 years old and already like fully discipled into the hurry culture of our world. But I wonder, as we settle in to talk about Sabbath this morning, whether you can already feel that same objection rising in your own heart and mind and stomach. And look, I get it. For the longest time, it was my objection too. My life was just too full of important, good things. Monday to Friday, I'd arrive at school by 7:30 each morning and be lucky to leave before 5. Then there was Bible study on Wednesday night and youth group on Friday night and inevitably some other church-related meeting on Monday or Tuesday or maybe both. And then on top of that, I had writing deadlines to keep on top of and the next K-Central thing to plan, you know, laundry to deal with, groceries to do, emails to send, friends and family to keep up with. And so when the weekend rolled around, my strategy was basically just to kind of try and convince myself that a change was as good as a holiday. Instead of slowing down, I just replaced my day job with life admin and writing work, bought the groceries with an audiobook about honing my schedule in my ears, and then ironed some shirts for the next week, stayed up too late playing video games or something in a misguided effort to decompress, and then fell into bed. And deep down, I think I knew I needed to do something. I was perpetually too tired to work as well as I wanted to, but never really resting either. But the idea of observing Sabbath the way the Bible lays it out, of taking a full 24 hours each week to put down all of my work, that wasn't even on my radar. For one thing, no one around me at church was doing it. Everyone else was just as caught up in their own little whirlwinds as I was. And for another thing, I mean, it's completely impractical, right? But then, somehow I found myself listening to a couple of sermon podcasts on the topic, and it was like something unlocked inside of me. It was like God was whispering, "Chris, have you ever considered that I might actually know better than you about this?" And it was that gentle rebuke that sent me off down the path from Sabbath skeptic to where I am today, standing up here actually right now in the middle of my Sabbath, overjoyed to get the opportunity to talk to the rest of you about it. Now, in my experience, we don't have that much Sabbath conversation in our lane of the church. It's just not really a thing that we do. We tend to treat the Ten Commandments as nine commandments and one suggestion. And so the question that you hear is like, well, do we have to keep the Sabbath? And people have all kinds of great, like, kind of reasons one way or the other. And look, that's a really valuable conversation that I have that I think, you know, is good for us to have. It's not the one that I want to really lean into today. I guess the question I want to ask is, what would you say about a kid who, upon receiving this awesome, perfectly chosen present from their parents, responded, "Do I have to keep this?" I mean, how weird would that be? What a bizarre attitude to have. And in the same way, I'm convinced that in the Sabbath, God is holding out an incredible gift to us. More than that, He's holding out wisdom to us. He's holding out a life that's another step closer to the one that we were made for. If any of you took on my suggestion to start listening to the Lectio 365 app, you would have maybe heard this morning. It's a quote from Wayne Muller's book on Sabbath. "Because we do not rest, we lose our way. We miss the compass points that would show us where to go. We bypass the nourishment that would give us succor. We miss the quiet that would give us wisdom. We miss the joy and love born of effortless delight." And so I'm hopeful that the more we understand God's heart behind the Sabbath, the more our questions will shift from "do we have to," as important as those questions are, to "how soon can we start?" As we turn at last, actually, why don't I pray for us? Because it's like me. Loving Father, thank you for this opportunity. Thank you that we do get to think about this gift that you hold out to us. And I pray that as I speak, that you would help us to just forget anything that I say that's not from you. May it just fall to the ground, and may we take on whatever it is that you want us to hear today. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. So as we turn finally to our first Bible reading today, God's people have just been liberated from slavery in Egypt. God has brought them to Mount Sinai to cut a covenant with them. "I will be your God, you will be my people, and together we're going to show the whole world what life in my kingdom looks like." And right there, among the Ten Commandments, the top 10 ways in which God's people are meant to represent God's character, we find this instruction. "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work." And then we get the reason for this command. "For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." This Sabbath command from Exodus connects Israel's rest to God's rest all the way back at the creation of the world. Here's the relevant passage from page 2 of the Bible. "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." So here's the question. Why does God rest? It's not because he's tired. God doesn't get tired. God rests because he is taking delight in his work. God works because work is good. And then God rests because rest is good. Work and rest, this rhythm, 6 days on, one day off, this was stitched into the fabric of creation before everything went wrong. Now, of course, work and rest have both gone into the ditch since then. But the Sabbath, I think, is God's recovery project for us. And so then on Mount Sinai, God instructs his people to follow the same rhythm that he established. Once every week, for a full 24 hours, everyone is to put their work down, to rest and to worship, to remember who God is and who they are. And as they do so, they're submitting themselves to this rhythm of work and rest that God has woven into the very fabric of creation. People, of course, have, you know, continually had other ideas for how we might do this. The last major attempt to change the seven-day week was in 1793, around the time of the French Revolution, when France had a go at switching over to a 10-day week, 9 days on, 1 day off, in an effort to, like, up productivity. The result was that the economy crashed, mental illness and death by suicide skyrocketed, and workplace productivity plummeted. All of which tallies with a wealth of more recent research dispelling the myth that the more you work, the more you get done. The truth, borne out by study after study, is that work productivity hits a hard ceiling at around 50 hours a week. In other words, if you're working 60, 80, 100 hours a week, all the research says you're not actually achieving any more meaningful outcomes than you would if you worked just 50 hours, which, as you may have already calculated, works out to about 6 days on, 1 day off. Meanwhile, the secular writer Dan Buettner spent years researching different people groups who live longer than everybody else in an attempt, in his words, to reverse engineer longevity. And in the course of his research, he discovered that Seventh-day Adventists in America live an average of 10 years longer than the rest of the population. How do they do it? Well, here's what Buettner told the Huffington Post. The Seventh-day Adventists take this idea of Sabbath very seriously. So they're decompressing their stress. About 84% of healthcare dollars are spent because of bad food choices, inactivity, and unmanaged stress. And they have these cultural ways of managing this stress through their Sabbath. And once again, run the numbers on this, and a 10-year life extension works out to about one extra day a week. It's almost as if, as these apprentices of Jesus trust him on this weekly Sabbath rhythm, God gives those days right back to them. So again, do we have to keep the Sabbath? Well, as Christians, we're not under the law, we're under grace. So if you mean, do we have to practice the Sabbath in order to, like, get saved or to maintain our salvation, then no, of course not. But if God really has built this rhythm of work and rest into creation itself, then to defy that rhythm would be to go against the grain of the universe, which, as the theologian H.H. Farmer points out, is how you get splinters. Let's turn to our second Bible reading. Fast forward 40 years from the book of Exodus to the book of Deuteronomy, and you'll find the next generation of God's people at the edge of the land God promised to give them as their home. Before they enter, Moses reminds them of the law God handed down to them back on the mountain. He restates the Ten Commandments almost verbatim, but then when he gets to the Sabbath command, he nuances the rationale a bit. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Why are God's people to keep the Sabbath? Because they're no longer slaves. For 400 years, the people of Israel have been enslaved in Egypt, generation after generation. They've been told that their value and worth was based on what they could produce and achieve and do. And so God gave his people the Sabbath as a weekly reminder that they were so much more than this, that their value didn't depend on what they did, but on who they were, God's precious, rescued, dearly loved children. God wanted his people to sit still long enough to remember who he was and to remember who they were in him. As recovering slaves, it was a message that they desperately needed to hear. Do you think they're the only ones? 10 days ago, Kaylee and I moved into a new apartment, and now, for the first time in my adult life, I am the proud co-owner of a dishwasher. After decades of hand-washing my dishes, guys, the absolute glee that I get every time I take a dish over and stack it into the dishwasher instead of carrying it to the sink, I can't even describe it. I feel like I've stepped into some, like, futuristic sci-fi utopian wonderland. This thing is going to save me so much time. Or at least that's what I tell myself. But history suggests that things are not so simple. In the mid-1960s, as dishwashers and other labor-saving devices became more and more prevalent, there was this US Senate subcommittee that was told that by 1985, the average person would probably work 22 hours per week for 27 weeks of the year. And so we needed to do something about this because we were going to face this massive problem as Western society of like what we were going to do with all of our leisure time. Needless to say, that is not how things have panned out. Why? Because from dishwashers to microwaves to email to AI, every single time our society has been handed the opportunity to choose between more leisure and more productivity, between more time and more money, we have collectively chosen the latter. We live in one of the busiest cultures the world has ever known. Growing up, we're told over and over again that we need to work hard and make the most of every opportunity to succeed in life. We have so many pressures on us to keep going. School and work and sport and hobbies and family commitments and social stuff and jobs that need doing around the house. And even when we've got nothing on, our phones and our devices mean that we still don't stop. There's always a new post to like, a message to respond to, a show to catch up on, which means that most of the time, even when we're resting, we're not really resting. Our lives are still full of noise. And then you add to that the mental load of constantly just having far too much information to keep up with, which makes sense given that we now create as much information as a society every 18 minutes as we did in the entire time from the dawn of civilization until 2003. Is it any wonder you feel a bit exhausted and like it's kind of hard to keep up? There is always more to do, to experience, to buy, to know, to fill up our lives with. Most of us don't think of ourselves as slaves. But if you can never step off the treadmill, if you can't carve out regular time to stop, to rest, to remember where your true identity and value comes from, what does that make you? Jesus invites us into a better way of living. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." I love Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of this word, of these words in his Message translation. Are you tired? Worn out? Burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Do we have to keep the Sabbath? Well, you tell me. But how's the alternative treating you? Is the current pace of your life leading to health and flourishing and closeness with God? Or do you need to get away with Jesus and recover your life? One more observation before we move on to some like more practical things. Here's Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 13 and 14 again. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Notice who gets to rest here. It's everyone. It's very comprehensive. The men and the women get to rest, the kids get to rest, the servants get to rest, the animals get to rest. And so the Sabbath isn't just a privilege for the rich who can afford to outsource their work to other people to make time for it. The Sabbath is for everyone. The Sabbath is good news for the poor. In a world of rich and poor, slaves and masters, the Sabbath is God's day for everyone to be given the dignity of rest. And as much as I'd like to tell myself that I don't have any underpaid servants to set free each day for a day each week, the truth is not so simple, is it? Because the sad reality is that slavery hasn't been eliminated from our modern world. There are more slaves in the world today than at any other time in history. We've just moved them offshore where we don't have to interact with them personally. But chances are, your home is just like mine, full of stuff created in overseas factories by overworked, undercared for staff who got paid next to nothing. I did an IKEA run. I don't know where any of that stuff came from. So what do we do about that? In our globalized world, where we're so disconnected from the people who function as servants in our lives, what power could we possibly have to make sure that everybody gets a day of rest? Well, there's a much bigger conversation to be had here. I've already spoken to Danny about the idea of preaching a sermon on simplicity at some point next year. But here's a starting point. What if we took a day off buying stuff? Or at least from buying stuff that we don't know where it comes from. What if we took the Sabbath as a weekly opportunity to step off the economic machine that perpetuates prosperity for us at the expense of the global poor? To be completely honest with you, this is a part of Sabbath that I'm only just beginning to explore, but I suspect I could do far worse on my Sunday than to take up this weekly invitation to push back against the consumer mindset of our culture. What might it unlock in us if we took a day each week to say, I already have enough? So again, do we have to keep the Sabbath? Well, you tell me. But the Bible does seem to suggest that it's the rhythm that we're created for, that it has the potential to be a powerful weekly reminder from God of who He is, who we are, and what matters most. That it's an opportunity to begin opening ourselves up to God's heart for the poor and the oppressed. And if all that's not enough, here's the other scoop I can give you from the inside. It has the very real potential to be consistently, hands down, the best day of your week. So what does it actually look like? Well, like I said last week, Sabbath is something I used to practice regularly as a single person, but that Kaylee and I have had to reimagine as a married couple, and we're going to have to do a whole lot more reimagining in January when the baby comes, and then we're going to have to keep on integrating for a toddler and a, you know, like on and on. But let me just paint a picture of our current version with the caveat that we never get it as right as it looks on paper, and also we're just like about a month into practicing it like this. So this is all just a first draft. But let me paint a picture for you. I guess the first thing to say is that observing the Sabbath takes some preparation ahead of time. As Kaylee and I figure out how to practice the Sabbath together each Sunday, what I'm noticing is that our Fridays and Saturdays end up feeling a bit fuller than they might otherwise, because we're squeezing all of our prep in for the next week rather than doing it on Sunday afternoon after church. But I'm also finding that those slightly fuller days tend to stress me out less. Yesterday was a notable exception, actually, but they tend to stress me out less because I know I've got a full day of rest waiting just around the corner. And I also am hopeful that those overstuffed Fridays and Saturdays might not necessarily be a permanent arrangement. I think they're just growing pains as we recalibrate the week. See, I think the end goal here is to basically like psychologically eliminate Sundays from our calendar, to run our whole lives as if the week only contains 6 days, and to schedule our lives accordingly. I got pretty good at this as a single person. Saturday was my Sabbath, which I just decided meant it made it off limits for scheduling anything. And so little by little, I just eliminated it from my thinking about work and chores and scheduling. And now that Kaylee and I are observing the Sabbath on Sunday, which I actually think is ideal if you can make it work, I'm trying to cultivate the same attitude. As far as my work and my life admin and my appointments are concerned, Sunday just doesn't exist. Monday comes right after Saturday, which might seem kind of silly, but I found it a really helpful way to think about it. So anyway, each week, Sunday rolls around. We still set an alarm to make sure that we don't miss church, but it's late enough that we usually wake up before it goes off anyway. We get up, we take the morning as slow as we can. I'll make a cup of coffee and just sit and look out the window for a bit. For the last couple of weeks, we've been making pancakes for breakfast, which is pretty good. Then we head to church, and already in the few weeks since we've been doing Sabbath on Sunday, what I've been noticing is that I'm more engaged when I come here, because I'm not sitting there running through the grocery list and all the things that I need to do when I get home. There is no to-do list for when I get home. And if there's a lunch happening after church like there is today, we're just available by default. We don't have another thing on because we don't put things on. And I'm finding more enthusiastic about the idea of coming to church on a Sunday. You know how sometimes, maybe this is just me that I don't know if I'm meant to admit this from the front, but like sometimes you hear a church lunch and you're meant to be like, yay, and you're like, cool, one more thing. But we have no other things. Even if we get home at 3:30 or whatever, we're just going to chill out until we go to bed. And so, cool. And if there's not a lunch after church, then we'll find something else to eat. Finding something fun to eat is a big part of our marriage in general, and specifically on the Sabbath, it's an important thing. And so we'll make our way home whenever that is, take things slow, maybe go for a walk, read, pray, play a board game, journal for a bit, sit on the couch and just be. And all day we try to avoid even talking about work or errands we need to run or ideas for setting up the apartment or anything that's going to like put us back in the work zone. I can wait until tomorrow. Instead, what we've already found is that Sabbath creates space for the big important conversations that we haven't had time for during the week. So it's not all chill. Sometimes it's like it gets a bit heavy, but it's like we've got the space for it. When we get hungry, again, find something great for dinner. Tonight's menu is homemade pizzas and whatever's left of that carton of salted caramel Haagen-Dazs that's waiting in the freezer. I'll probably have a beer or two. Kayla will have whatever is the next best thing. And eventually she'll get back to having a beer with me. After that, we'll chill for a bit, but also try and head to bed early. Like, it sounds good, right? Will I look back on this mode of Sabbath from February and be like, man, we had no idea how good? Yeah, absolutely. But even then, the solution is not to ditch the Sabbath. It's to figure out how to take a rest day as the parents of a newborn, because how much more will we need it then? The challenge in all of this, of course, is the same as last week. We don't have time. How was anyone not sitting there listening to that and being like, cool, that's really good for you. I can't, like, that is impossible for us. You know, here's the thing. You don't have time for this. If you don't already practice the Sabbath, of course you don't have time for it. You don't have a spare day just floating around in your calendar. The question is, what would it take to make the time? What would it take to make it possible? I'm going to go ahead and assume you're busy. Who among us is not? What are you busy with? How would you complete the sentence, I don't have time for this because? What specific activities are currently standing in the way of your Sabbath? And what would it look like then to slowly begin dismantling those obstacles so you can actually do it? What do you need to reschedule? What do you need to deprioritize? What do you need to commit to spending less time on? What do you need to put down altogether? What are you currently, in practice, valuing over this thing that God is holding out to you? And like, yes, look at your Sunday. Or whatever day you decide is a more likely candidate. If Sunday really doesn't work, Danny, I don't know what to tell you, man. This is your biggest work day. Like, we can chat later. I don't know. But for the rest of us, let's look at the rest of our week. What would it take to open up space on a Tuesday night so that we can shift something over and maintain our Sundays? Could you find another time in the week to do the groceries, to iron your shirts, to put the laundry on? What would it look like piece by piece to reschedule or remove the rest of your Sunday obligations? I don't know. You tell me. To finish, let me give you three final observations about all this from my own experience. First, practicing the Sabbath is always going to seem impossible until you do it. But not only is it possible, I actually find that I am more productive when I practice the Sabbath well, because rather than doing what I used to do, which is being perpetually too tired to work at my peak but never really resting either, I go into each week more refreshed from last Sunday. And then as the week goes on and I get exhausted, those final few days are more achievable because it's like 3 days till Sabbath, 2 days till Sabbath, it's tomorrow, it's today. And so it all, like, it's impossible, and then it's possible, and then it's awesome, and actually you will be the better for it. Second, practicing the Sabbath is going to take time to get right. If you can wake up and, like, do this next Sunday and nail it, I mean, power to you. But for the rest of us, start where you are, not where you feel like you should be. If you need to, take a few weeks, a few months to ramp up from an hour, if that's all you can snatch back at first, to a few hours, to a whole day. I mean, you're already here, so that's, you know, you're part of the way there already. But just like figure it out as you go. In my time, my experience, by the time you feel like you've got it nailed, you just roll right into a new life stage and have to like upend the whole thing and go again. But like, just stick with it. And finally, practicing the Sabbath is better together. Here is what I've observed at this church in the like year and a half that Kaylee and I have been coming here. A, this seems like a community of people who are already taking their apprenticeship to Jesus seriously. When you sense an invitation from Jesus, you seem pretty ready to get on board. And B, this feels like a community that thrives when it's on a shared mission together. I think of K-Central and just how many of us show up to that every year. And so here's the thing. It is possible to practice Sabbath on your own. I've done it. It went okay. It is also possible to practice the Sabbath on a day other than Sunday. I've done that too. It was really life-giving. But what if we decided to pursue this together? What if we just collectively decided we were going to tell work that we were unavailable on Sundays? What if we just collectively decided that any laundry that wasn't done by Saturday night could wait until Monday? What if, instead of being defeated by the many obstacles to Sabbath that our culture puts in front of us, we brought those obstacles to each other to troubleshoot and figure out how to make them not so big of a thing? What if we actively looked for ways to support one another during the week so that the people who are particularly snowed under have a better shot of freeing up their Sunday? What if we did this collectively? What if we decided to just go for it? What if, however falteringly, we decided to take the leap as a community and see what happened? Am I dreaming too big? You tell me. Let me pray for us. Our great God, thank you for this gift that you hold out to us, for this profound gift of stepping back into the rhythm we were created for, of remembering our true identity as your chosen, dearly loved people, for the opportunity to take some fumbling steps towards justice for the poor and the oppressed, for the opportunity to stop and celebrate, to run everything through the filter of joy and worship and put all the rest down until tomorrow. What a profound gift, and yet it is a gift that feels so difficult to reach out and take. So please teach us bit by bit to put down all the other things that are in our hands so that we have the capacity and to reach out and take this thing that you are holding out to us. Please help us to figure that out in our own lives and in our own little family units, but also as your family together here at Petersham. Please lead us each step of the way, and thank you that we can already be completely confident that you will. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, I think we are going to sing.